Welcome to the HR Chat Show, one of the world's most downloaded and shared podcasts designed for HR pros, talent execs, tech enthusiasts, and business leaders. For hundreds more episodes and what's new in the world of work, subscribe to the show, follow us on social media, and visit hrgazette.com.
Welcome to another episode of the HR Chat Show. I'm your host today, Bill Banham. And my guest today says that instead of aiming for work-life balance, the goal should be what he calls work-life bloom. Dan Pontefract is the founder and CEO over at Pontefract Group, a firm that improves the state of leadership and organizational culture. Dan is the best-selling author of four books: Lead, Care, Win, How to Become a Leader Who Matters, Open to Think, The Purpose Effect, and Flat Army. A renowned speaker, Dan has presented at four different TED events and also writes for Forbes and Harvard Business Review.
Fadello Inc. is a consulting firm specializing in improving human performance, and we're proud to support the HR Chat podcast. We help identify strategic competencies and behaviors that drive results. Our team offers an HR web software to manage systems, reports, and data for HR people that need the best insights to make the right decisions and achieve better results. Learn more at Fadello.com.
Hey, Dan, welcome to the show today.
Bill, great to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
It's my pleasure. It's my honor to have you on the show today. Beyond my reintroduction there, Dan, why don't you start by taking a minute or two and telling our listeners a bit more about yourself?
Well, first of all, I always love hanging out with people who know how to enunciate my last name properly. So Pontefract, I've got all kinds of different versions of that, as you can imagine, over my career, Bill. I'm trying to be the antithesis of my last name, Bill. Ponte, of course, Latin or French, is bridge. And fract is to break, a fracture. So I'm trying to build bridges, Bill. Wherever I go, in the corporate world, in the not-for-profit world, in the public sector world, I've had a blast, 25 years. Behind me, I hope another 25 to go, and I'm trying to make the world a better place by building those bridges. My purpose statement, my declaration of purpose, as I call it, we're not here to see through each other, we're here to see each other through. And if I can live each every day with that, including with three teenagers who drive me crazy and a beautiful better half, I'm living life to its fullest, Bill.
Genos North America is a global team of changemakers using emotional intelligence to enhance how we connect, communicate, and collaborate at work. And we are proud to support this episode of the HR Chat Podcast. Transforming essential people skills at work makes a difference to people's relationships outside of the workplace. Using our tools, people become better parents, partners, siblings, and friends. That's why we call our work game-changing for business and life-changing for people. Learn more at genosnorthamerica.com.
Love it. And I believe that you refer to your three kids as your three goats. Is that right?
Well, you know, here's the thing. So I started calling them goats when I had the second one in 2005. And then all of a sudden, goats became like an acronym, greatest of all time. And people thought I was calling my kids greatest of all time, which I guess they are in my eyes. But, you know, let's be honest, they're probably not, right? But no, like goats are Billy kids, Billy goats, kids, right? So that's where that came from. And now I feel like a horse's ass every time I call them goats because people think I'm calling them actually the goats. So there you go.
Okay. In my mind, I'd envisaged three giant kids are always hungry. That's where I was going with that one, Dan.
Fair enough.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about the mission of the Pontefract with my enunciation, the Pontefract Group.
Here's the thing. For far too often, pundits, executives, authors, certainly keynote speakers who have been on TED a few times, argue that the future of work is a big thing and that there's this future of work and they're always espousing the future of work. Well, I don't believe in that theory. I believe that the future of work and life is now. And far too many leaders are thinking about, you know, 2 and 3 and 4 years out when they should really be thinking about what is it that's going on in the heads of their employees that they're serving through to the customer and trying to find the ways in which to actually fix the now of work and life. So for me, Bill, quite honestly, the future of work and life is now. And what I try to do is to bring some semblance of visionary order to today, to Earth, to ground us so that, you know, we can tackle some of the bigger problems that are really in front of our faces.
Thanks for tuning in to the HR Chat Podcast. If you're enjoying this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you could subscribe and leave a 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice. And now, back to the conversation.
Ahead of this call, Dan, I was doing my homework and I was stalking you a little bit on LinkedIn there, trying to get to see what you're getting up to, what you're particularly proud of at the moment. And I saw a recent post saying that your podcast, the Leadership Now podcast, has been listed as one of the top podcasts in the space. Congratulations. I always get a bit nervous when I'm talking to a fellow podcaster. Tell our listeners a bit about the podcast, Dan.
Oh, it's just a selfish effort to vaingloriously get myself in front of more YouTube people, isn't it? Isn't that what a podcast really is at the end of the day? No, Bill. I am, I guess, at the end of the day, an autodidact. And that's a fancy, almost, 25 cent, £1 word to say that I like self-learning. And if I like self-learning, the best way for me to learn is through other people. And so Leadership Now, the podcast, is just an effort for me to reach out to people and say, hey, I've read this of yours, or I saw you do this, or I was wondering, why did you do this? And can we have a chat about it? And so, quite frankly, it's a selfish exercise. However, you might as well record those selfish exercises and put them out in audio and video formats. And I also turn them into Forbes columns or pieces in books so that others might learn from my selfishness to become ultimately a bridge building selfless act of leadership development.
I did preface our chat earlier on in the introduction by saying that you don't really believe in the idea of work-life balance. Instead, you propose that it's all about this notion of work-life bloom. What on earth is that, Bill? Well, let's get into that now, listeners.
Bloom is such an interesting word, first of all. I have to dissect it or define it. It can mean certainly a bloom algae, which is not the one I'm going for. So it's not work-life algae. That would be awful. The bloom I'm referring to is, you know, the one that might be taken with a garden metaphor. Like, what are the factors in both your work and life, quite frankly, back to the point of the future of work and life is now? What are those factors, Bill, that allow you to rise? And as we know, every garden does not have its crops there all year. There's a cycle. And I think what we need to learn, particularly going into the pandemic and certainly as a result of the pandemic, is that we are all construct of our work and life factors, and there's a cycle that goes along with it. So let me try to explain. It's ludicrous to think that work-life balance ought to be the goal. It's probably as helpful as terms like right-sizing or thinking outside the box. It doesn't mean anything to balance work and life, because what we've learned is that work is in life, but life is in our work. And so I'm not suggesting it's one thing, by the way. There is work and life. But to suggest that we might be able to balance the two is to suggest that we're actually aware of all the factors that can make that happen. And we're not. And particularly if you're looking at a leader, I think the better question to ask is, you know, well, what permits people to be their best? Rather than asking, well, how is it that we might be able to create a balance? Well, what gets in the way of just simply being people's best? So what are those work factors? What are those life factors? And then you say, well, Dan, are leaders really supposed to be asking their employees or team members about their life? Well, if you take, I guess, the word life and extend it to self, that there are characteristics or traits or attributes of the self that, yes, a leader ought to be thinking about with respect to that team member, because those same traits are going to be taking into their, quote, life after work, or they're going to come from life and bring it into work. then we need to be aware of that and do something about it as a leader. That work and life are actually both complementary and contradictory forces to one another. Yet leaders are unaware of those complementary and contradictory forces, and they sort of just expect the team member to be fully aware of themselves, and thus they should be high performing all the time. That is not the case. We're deluding ourselves because of the fact that we think that there should be a balance and not that there are these specific factors that allow us to be our best.
Just a quick follow-up on that one. Does it really matter? Does it really matter if we're at our best all the time or if we're not at our best all the time, Dan? If these days, post-pandemic, a lot of employees, they don't care how many hours people put in, for example. It's about the output. If someone gets the job done, then does all the rest of it matter?
I guess it depends what type of employer you are. I would suggest to you, Bill, that our lives shape our work. Nevertheless, our work shapes us. And so if you're an employer of kindness, of empathy, of care, you do want to help your people be their best, because when they're their best, that means they're their best at work and in life. And what I mean by that is, you're helping to create the whole of the human so that they have a great time, if you will, quote, at home on a weekend, at night, on the football pitch, watching their daughter's, drama class, their son's arts and crafts class, whatever it is, you are sort of helping them become or be their best as a whole human being. And then conversely, you're creating those conditions to even fulfill the performance or objectives or goals requirements of the organization. It's quite frankly, in my opinion, in my research, like a better way to lead and to operate and function, the business or the organization itself. I guess in Bill, in summary, it's, well, what type of leader do you want to be known as? What type of organization do you want to be known for? Output or input?
I like that a lot. I like that a lot. I wonder, in your career, have there been leaders that have inspired you to be your best at work, but also outside of work too?
I've had both kinds. I've had the ones that are only worried about output, and I have ones that worry about the input so that the output can be a high-performing output with care. I won't name names, of course, but I had one where that individual, that leader, would clock watch me when I was leaving the office, and invariably one day pulled me aside and looked at the watch that he was had on his wrist, and sort of gave that whole little like, hey, you know what time it is? That kind of fake looking at the watch and looking at me. And I said, yeah, I do. It's 4:30. And the individual said, yeah, I know. Don't you think that's kind of early to be going home? And I said, well, depends. What time did you come in today? And he said, 9. And I said, I came in at 7:30. So I'm going to go home now. And so it's those moments where I've had kind of boots on the ground experiences of leaders doing it wrong, worried only about output and not input, and thus, really having no idea of how our lives shape our work. Nevertheless, our work shapes us. And then I've had the complete opposite, where, I had some pretty difficult times with the birth of our third child, and I had the most caring, empathic leader who was 2,000 miles away in a different city, not even in the same city where I was working, and just constantly making sure that the moments up to the birth and through the birth and the few weeks afterwards, just on me in such a good and caressing way, to make sure that my wife was okay, that the child was okay, that I was okay, doing whatever he could from afar to make me feel like I was cared for and that work didn't matter. Not to worry about it, that this too shall pass, if you will. So, yeah, I could keep going, but I bore your listeners. Everyone has these moments and these leaders whom can demarcate for you if they're in it just for the work or if they understand the integration, right, between the work and the life, and just how can they be there to help you bloom in moments of duress, but also in moments of love.
I love that. And in the case of that leader, He was 2,000 or so miles away. Did you find, as a result of the way that they treated you, you were more loyal, you were more engaged with that particular leader, and also perhaps you were more engaged and more loyal to the company?
Really good question, Bill. And I would say it just kind of further cemented, you know, the relationship. It wasn't that I expected it. It was that this individual who had been my leader for the two previous years, from the get-go, was about that type of empathy, that proactive care, that thinking about the whole of the person. And then, quite frankly, I think that person has informed a lot of my thinking on what good leaders ought to be doing when it comes to that work and life and kind of bloom concept, if you will. So I'm still in touch with that individual, a charming, now retired gentleman, you know, salt of the earth, one might describe the individual as, whom just really, really gets it. I'll give you a quick little segue. I'll give you another example who I can name and was never my leader. And that's the former CEO of Boeing and Ford, Alan Mulally. And you're like, Dan, why are you bringing up Alan Mulally? Well, Alan Mulally, about 3 years ago now, reached out to me with a voicemail and said, Dan, I've just read one of your books. It's the closest thing ever that that I've read that matches my culture theory called working together. Can we have a chat? And the chat was quickly turned into, I need to see you. Can we get on Zoom? So we get on Zoom and say perhaps that it's kind of turned into a bit of a bromance, if you will, because he's such a caring individual. Here I am, and he's now, you know, 7 or 8 years retired as CEO of Ford. He's taken me under his wing to help me through thick and thin of some of the vagrancies of my life that I'm trying to navigate and circumnavigate. He's just such a great leader, friend now. I think my point is, Bill, we can always, no matter what age we are, where we are, our stature, you know, our title, we can always look through those opportunities to see where we might lend a hand to help people with their work and their life and to allow them to bloom. Or to resurrect, you know, their opportunity to bloom. So I wanted to pay homage to Alan because he's been influential the last couple of years for me. As I went solo 4 years ago and having left the corporate world, he's kind of become almost like my leader who is looking out for me, like that leader I just alluded to during, you know, the time I had at SAP.
Big shout out to Alan if you're listening in. You sound like a pretty good guy. Respect to you, sir. Hey, Dan, You've discovered quite a lot when you've been creating your work-life bloom research. What are the four work-life personas that you discovered and you talk about now?
Yeah, well, so what I did, Bill, this time around, I got some really good advice from a Harvard Business Review editor who said, Dan, your books are pretty good. Two of the three things are really good. One, you tell really good stories. Two, you have really good models and techniques and tactics. But three, the thing you're missing is really good primary research. Yes, you do have some interviews, but can you quantify and qualify, you know, your models and your stories? I was like, okay, I need to go do this. So in 2022, I spent pretty much the predominant portion, sorry, of the year, and conducted primary research across the world. So I have 220 odd individual one-on-one interviews, but I also have just over 10,000 responses from a global survey of 11 different countries where I asked the questions, what basically makes you bloom? And if these were to come together, how many people are, quote, blooming? And so first of all, let me define like the four personas as you've asked, Bill. So bloom is your whole self is prospering in both work and life. That kind of makes sense. Work-life bloom, right? So everything's going well in work and everything's going well in life slash myself, right? The self factors. But then there's other three. And again, this goes back to the cycle. We're not always going to be blooming. I can tell you my life story that I've not been 100% blooming my 25 years of career. So what are those other three personas, those kind of drivers, if you will? Well, if we kind of work back, let's say that things are working really well in life. So your individual self skills, if you will, are high, but things aren't going so well at work. So there are some things maybe that are stalled. So I call that the cultivate persona. You're pretty good at life. Like things are flying, if you will, like your self skills, but you need to like dig into the ground a little bit because you have to kind of cultivate what those work factors aren't doing for you. And so you have to do some like hoeing, some digging. You get the spade out, right? You're kind of like having to really dig a little deeper to continue the metaphor. So you are aware of what's going wrong at work and maybe to have those discussions of dialogue with your boss. But flip side is the leader should be aware of where that employee sits as well, somewhat obviously. What's the reverse of cultivate? Well, to use the garden box metaphor still, I'm using germinate right now. So if you're in a germinate persona, you're successful at work because the bed is there, the soil is awesome, and you can see some little like, you know, sparks happening. There's some budding happening, you know, in the proverbial box of you, the garden box. But your self skills, your life skills, some of those key factors that are literally helping you become you are in a deficit or they're in need of renewal or what have you, right? And so that's kind of where the third persona is. And then the last one right now I'm just calling renew or renewal. And so that's where both work and both life are kind of low in terms of those factors. So those are the four: bloom, cultivate, germinate, renew. And when I tested that, I found out what the top six factors are for both work and life. So I have those. But interestingly, I did two things. In the 10,000 odd primary research that went out to 11 different countries, I asked people to self-report what they thought their persona might be right now. So summer of 2022, when this was conducted. And then using some researchers, we figured out the right model and how to make this thing work. I then said, okay, well, here's what the model suggests. So here's the data. So what people self-describe themselves as was as follows. 36% of people said they're blooming, which might be thought of as high, but that's what, you know, 36% said, yes, my life is high, my work is high, I'm blooming. So 36%. 30% said they were germinating. So what's that again? That's high work, low life. 19% said they were cultivating. So again, that's high life, low work. And 16% said they were in renewal. So that was, again, low life, low work. What the model suggested after we figured out what the factors were was quite interesting. So blooming actually increased to 41%. So 41% of all team members and leaders, so both were asked, 41% said that they were blooming. Slightly higher for leaders, slightly lower for non-leaders. So it's about 47% for leaders and about 34, 35% for non-leaders, just to be clear. So we did demarcate. But then things got really interesting. The germinate and cultivate stages, so again, the flip of high-low, low-life, low-life, high-low, or high-work, sorry. 13% germinate, 9% cultivate, but renew jumped to 37%, Bill, meaning 37% of the team members, leaders and non-leaders, feel that their work factors are low, their self or life factors are low, and so they're in a stage of renewal. I've found this just to be fascinating, and then, you know, maybe we can talk about what are those actual work and life factors.
I'd absolutely love to do that, but we're out of time for today. So we're going to have to take that to another chat, Dan. And that just leaves me to say for today, Dan, thank you very much for being my guest on this episode of the HR Chat Show.
Bill, my sincere pleasure. Look forward to round two of this and getting into the next stages of work-life bloom. Thank you.
And listeners, as always, until next time, happy working.
Thanks for listening to the HR Chat Show. If you enjoyed this episode, why not subscribe and listen to some of the hundreds of episodes published by HR Gazette? And remember, for what's new in the world of work, subscribe to the show, follow us on social media, and visit hrgazette.com.